Swinging a drive down the left field line. If it's fair, this game is over. It's hooking. It is fair, and the Rangers win. Jake Berger with a walk-off hit, and Texas comes back and beats the Snakes 7-6. Losing streak snapped. Rangers get the W.
And with that, we start the Tolo Tuesday edition of Sean and RJ here on 105.3 The Fan. Good morning, Metroplex. We are live in our 11th floor studios. We got Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. We got Peyton and Aiden in the back. And we're on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. The Rangers' largest comeback win since September 28th of 2024. That was at LA against the Angels, and they did it after being down 6-1 with Nathan Eovaldi struggling like we never see.
Literally never see. He was as off as it gets, and they figured that out by the third inning. Arizona did that. He was off. They were completely eradicated one pitch. They could just take the curveball away. They knew he didn't have it. He knew he didn't have it, but he still had to try to throw it out there. And you saw it on those. There's a couple of lefties that were up where he's trying to spin that curveball, and it just stays in the right-handed batter's box. And that's a telltale sign for him that he just didn't have it, and they could sit on something else and completely get rid of that pitch out of their mind. And that's how they were able to just knock three homers out. But that comeback obviously starts with a wide home run, and then bam, you're back in the game.
Yeah, and I mean, that was Eovaldi last night. It's like, you even in the first inning, it looked like he still was normal Eovaldi. Like, he gets through the first five batters or whatever it is, sets them all down. It's like, all right, it's another Eovaldi start. And then just the fact that he's hanging those pitches and he gets the three home runs given up, and then he hits two guys. Like, I would got to look that up. I bet there's not been another start in Eovaldi's career where he's hit two guys. It's just not the typical control problems that he has. But he clearly was off, and then...
And he showed the frustration out there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. he clearly looked like he knew he didn't have it. Yeah. And the thing last night was, you're watching it and you're going like, all right, this is over. Like, already. Because you know the Rangers' offense and you know what they're capable of doing. And a 6-1 deficit or whatever it was, like, that's not anything that you feel like they're going to be capable of coming back from. And then it all turns around, like I said, with the Wyatt home run, which was right after what looked like it was about to be a Wyatt home run to the third deck before it went foul.
The last time that Eovaldi gave up three home runs, also against Arizona, also in the first three innings, September 10th, 2024. I thought that was pretty crazy that they put that stat up. But Wyatt turned the entire game around with the momentum. You're down one. Then Brisket, Sandoz, for all in the ninth inning. And then it's the big fellas, right? Yep. Jock Peterson pinch hit for a Berger and ball game.
It was, you're right, the big fellas there. And you get the rowdy home run is... Look, that was fun, because I mean, you want to see him obviously do well. You get another lefty bat out there that can rake. That was a no doubter, and I love the catcher's reaction. They show that shot right in front where it's like under right below the hitter. I don't know. They got the camera in the dirt. And you see the catcher just like kind of reach for the ball. Crap.
Yeah, they Brisket Sando yet, Rowdy?
They do it, and I will say, look, we got to be consistent. Jock Peterson, when Rowdy Tellez hits the home run, his celebration instantly at the top of the dugout was to smack his stomach with both hands. It's like, come on. We've seen already that Rowdy doesn't like those jokes, so he's got to stop. But Rowdy running into that home run, Langford crushing that one out, and then, yeah, you get Berger stepping up and getting the shot down the left field corner. It was the most improbable game they've played this year. There was no chance I thought that they were winning this baseball game.
They shouldn't have won it. Like you're down 6-1 mid-innings. I mean, that's not a game that you expect to win. And especially with this team, they don't hit.
If they hit a home run, like when Wyatt Langford hits a three-run home run, the thought that goes in my head is not, yes, you're down a run. The thought that goes through my head is, that's your one.
You're losing by one.
Yeah, it's like, oh, awesome. Okay, that was their one that they're going to get tonight. I wouldn't then think that they were going to come up with another one in the ninth.
When was the last time there was five home runs hit in a game there? With the roof closed. With the roof open. I had to check. I was like, well, they didn't open that roof yesterday. It was like 90, 100 degrees.
Well, it's about time that they actually helped out Nate. So this was a long time coming. Still probably owe him. The offense does a lot more to get even on the overall scoreboard of the season. But he gave up more runs last night through two innings plus than he did all of July and August. all of July and August. In the post, he said, you know, I wasn't making the usual pitches that I have during this recent hot stretch. I got away from that. Need to get back to it. Here's Boch on the amazing comeback.
With the last series, you get down. You know, Nate's been so good, and he just showed that, hey, you're going to have occasional games where you don't quite command it as well, and they took advantage of it, but he's picked us up so many times. So, man, what a great job by the boys, and find a way to win that ball game. What just a gutty effort by everybody, and bullpen, hitters. We needed this one.
By the boys.
I was just thinking that what a great job by the boys. That's going to have to be a drop, Peyton. I like that.
By the boys.
What a great job by the boys.
By the boys. I also wanted to give props to Seager and Smith, because before Wyatt goes off, they were the ones offensively that did anything for the Rangers. Mm-hmm. I can't even say kept them around, because it was a 6-1 game. But Josh Smith with 2 hits. Corey Seager with 2 hits as well. So I want to give them their shout outs. Unfortunately, this doesn't do anything for you in terms of the standings, because Seattle wins again. The armpit wins. You're 6.5 back in the West, and you're still 2.5 back in the wild card.
Yeah, but you got to keep pace. Yep. So there's that. You know, it's obviously the reverse of that is that they didn't win. You fall even further back. So that's good. I mean, you got to keep pace.
Jeff Bannister, former Rangers manager, is going to join us at 8. RJ Choppy booking him, the former Skip. Wow. And now this all of a sudden changes to a more interesting interview after they lose that lead.
Yeah, a little bit. We're having lunch today.
Wow.
We're having lunch today. Don't know where. Actually, I do know where. I just can't say it. But.
Yeah.
So if Sean and I press him with really difficult questions, then we might ruin your lunch, is what you're saying.
We'll ruin my lunch.
Okay. What are you gonna do when the bill comes?
I don't know. I mean, I'll reach for the credit card, and maybe we eat at the team hotel, and there's a tab.
I mean, you know where you're eating.
Yeah, maybe.
So
maybe
the team hotel.
Is a tab.
Yeah. Are you gonna do this one? The touch your. Like, no. Shirt pocket and then your pants pocket.
I got no problem paying for lunch.
Okay. Now, did Banny tell you don't publicize it on the radio where we're eating? He was afraid of the mob of Ranger fans to.
I'm afraid of the mob of fans.
Yeah.
For
me. Yeah, I'm afraid of the mob.
An amazing comeback win, probably the comeback win of the year for your Rangers. Jack Leiter will be on the mound this evening, 6:30 pregame, first pitch at 7 o'clock. The report became a national story for the first female umpire.
Yeah, Jen Powell. She was the first female umpire. Happened over the weekend, and she got her scorecard. She got her scorecard. This was something that kind of hacked me off. The scorecard was revealed for the debut. Now, it's okay that the scorecard was revealed, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But would they have produce this scorecard for any other first-time umpire? Like, they're just going to publicize this everywhere.
Well, if someone missed a humongous crucial call, right. Maybe.
Yeah, now, to be fair, they publicized that she was going to be an umpire, whereas they would not have publicized anybody else that was going to be an umpire.
Right.
So if you're going to do that, then you got to be straightforward and do all this. But she was not tremendous. 89th out of 92 umpires on accuracy. But I also think that this is completely ridiculous to put out there anyway, because she's 1% off the league average on everything. Am I crazy, or is that not that big of a deal?
Who do you think it's ridiculous for? Like the umpire scorecards website?
Or the critics?
Because they post everybody's scorecard from
right,
every
right,
game.
But it doesn't get picked up and aggregated by every media site. Like, you're piling on.
Well, it's a story.
And nobody's more toxic masculine than me.
Yeah.
But this is piling on. Like, if you would not have done this for any other first-time umpire where every website picks it up.
Well, I would also say they would not have made a news story out of every other umpire do it. So, like, I mean, I get it. Both ways.
Yes, I totally get what you're saying. Like, we don't know the names of 10 umpires.
Look, this is going to turn into a naturally sexist thing, including someone probably on the show. But it's vision. There's no reason to me Jen Powell cannot be an umpire or a good umpire, you know, even though she didn't play Major League Baseball. what's your site say? There's plenty of terrible umpires that we call out every single year, Angel Hernandez and others. People are just having extra fun with this because she's a female. Mm-hmm. But what do you see in terms of the ball crossing the plate?
They're all missing calls.
To me, it's, you know, guy, girl, doesn't matter. What's your vision?
She was 93% accurate, 93% consistent, meaning like both teams. So they have a score where you're like, are you an advantage for this team? Her overall favor was 0.28 for Miami. That's pretty small.
It's going to cut both ways, where she will get more scrutiny because she's a woman. She'll also probably get defended more frequently as an umpire or have criticism held back from some people because she's a woman. Like, that's going to be that's the challenge of being the first one to do anything like this. It's going to get you extra resistance, and it's also going to get you extra latitude.
Who's the first female NBA ref?
God, it was, I could see her. I could picture her.
I don't know her name.
I don't know the name either. Will we forget the name, Jen Powell? Is it different for baseball for some reason? Is it just a brand new thing that has never happened before? Whereas in the NBA, now we are used to it.
Violet Palmer. That's right. Violet Palmer.
We have never one time on the show been like, you see that female ref and what she did at the Mavs?
Right.
She screwed the Mavs over. And this, I think, eventually would be the same thing. She got 140 out of 151 pitches correct.
Yeah. Again, 1% below.
But not the
average.
First one.
Yeah, 1%. Not the first one. And look, I appreciate all the memes. I love them all.
What are the best memes?
Oh, the best memes is that she called the first one a ball, or the first one was wrong, and all the rest pitches, she just said, it's fine. She didn't say ball or strike. I appreciate all these. I laugh at them. I told Sarah that she was dying. She was dying laughing. I appreciate it. I just thought, like, you know, look, you're piling on here. I thought you're piling on.
The umpire might be different. It's not even umpire. It's literally just going to be when she's home plate. Because for a lot of people, it's like, care. It's the big bulky gear, and it's, you got to have, like, the loud strike call and everything else, like, it's going to be more noticeable probably to people that, oh, that's different.
No, what's going to be fun and really viral is the first, who is going to be the first manager to go out with the
Earl Boone.
Weaver.
Boone, probably.
Yeah, with the Earl.
Fired. He gets thrown out of, like, a game a week.
With the Earl Weaver meltdown and what's he saying to her, and then you get all the PC websites and reaction. Or is this going to, how many games until she tosses an umpire with a face-to-face interaction? It won't happen this year. That's my bet.
Oh, Probably not.
I think guys are going to be more hesitant.
More hesitant?
Yep.
Yeah, because, you know, we don't know. Like, some umpires have a quick trigger. They'll get you. You argue with them.
You like, kick the dirt of her home plate and say, here's the brush. You're used to this.
Because if you argue ball strikes, you're supposed to get thrown out. If you argue ball strike, it might come from the dugout.
It might just come from the dugout, but who's going to go out there and get in her face,
little darlings,
with her giving the old heave-ho?
And the other thing is she going to be, again, it's gonna be both ways. Is she going to have a quicker trigger because she may feel like you're coming at me for a particular reason, you don't like it, or is she going to be slower to do it? Like, I need to not be viewed as sensitive, so I'm not going to throw this person out and do that. Like, I think it's, I mean, it does present a ton of challenges personally for her, I'm sure.
214 saying, did you say toss an umpire? If I said toss an umpire, sorry, I meant toss a manager. So there's the national story all over the websites with, is it Jen Powell?
Powell, yeah.
P-A-W-O-L. Yeah, Jen Powell. It's all good.
Yep.
You know the first ref, NFL, her name?
I don't.
It was Thomas. Sarah Thomas?
No, I
Katie
did.
Thomas?
You can tell me the name, and I would go, Sarah, okay, Thomas? Sure, I believe you.
Jeff Bannister coming up at 8 o'clock this morning on the home of the Rangers before his big lunch with RJ Choppy on DFW Sports Station, 877-881-1053. Do we finally have some Micah movement? And the Cowboys were out on the red carpet last night inside the Star with your Oxnard training camp update and report next on your home of the Cowboys with Sean and RJ. Well, Jerry and the family were on the red carpet in Los Angeles last night with Emmett and Michael Irvin and Al Michaels as the MC. The rest of the Dallas Cowboys were cleaning up preseason game number one. Good morning, Metroplex. Shout out to the best audience of our entire show. It is the 6 a.m. club on the home of America's team with Sean, RJ, and Bobby. Brian Schottenheimer declined to say that Joe Milton is the backup quarterback. He said, quote, we don't have to decide that today. I need to get to learn him as the play caller. Not going to say who the backup running back is right now, who the backup quarterback is right now, because I don't have to make those decisions yet. Our plan all along was to find out about Joe. Under no circumstance am I panicked or worried about Joe Milton. Played really well in the second half. Did some really good things. He calmed down. He figured it out. And Bobby, you compare this to a video game.
Yeah, it reminds me of Frogger. You remember Frogger?
Solid game. Matter of fact, that Seinfeld episode was on the other day.
It's Frogger's a great game. It was one of the first video games I ever played.
Hey, and you know what Frogger is?
Yeah, the frog game where you're jumping across all the, you know, avoiding the logs or whatever.
Yeah. Look at you, man.
What were your top two arcade games that you played?
Pac-Man, 100%. Really? I loved Pac-Man.
I couldn't do Pac-Man. Pac-Man always gave me anxiety. Like, just the little, like, ugh.
It did.
Like,
it did, yeah.
It was more jittery than all the other games.
That was terrible, that game.
No, so the issue is that with Frogger, you got to move across those five lanes of traffic, then you get, like, a rest point there in the video game. Then you got to jump across, like, five rows of, you know, alligators and other stuff and disappearing turtles and things like that. And so you got to be kind of measured with the way you move across the road. You can't just, when you're at the starting line, push the joystick forward and run as fast as you can to get to the other side in the game. It won't work. And Joe Milton seems like he just pushes his joystick forward instead of like, hey, take it easy. Move to the left a little. You can wait. I know there's a car coming, but just wait. It's okay to just wait there for a second and then step forward. There's a little bit of that. He just thinks, ball snapped, I got to run as fast as I can because there's stuff coming and I'm terrified by it. It's just, it looks like that somebody who's just still figuring that game out and trying to figure out, all right, how do I navigate this with a little bit of patience? And that's him when the ball snapped. As soon as the ball snapped, if he can slow himself down and recognize, oh, yeah, okay, there's that defender, but I know, slide over here, step forward, be patient, deliver the football. Like, as soon as he gets that down, he'll be much better.
Is he, okay, because this is like the tug of war, like, is he too fast or is he too slow?
No, he's too fast. He's too slow getting everybody to the line of scrimmage. He's too fast when the ball is snapped. Everything is happening so fast around him that he looks panicked. The first three throws of the game the other night, he didn't need, especially the first one, he didn't need to throw off platform and fall in. It was blocked. It was blocked in front of him. He had time. And all three of those throws, he had time and he just tried to get the ball out too quick.
So you're saying he's too fast to leave the pocket.
I just think he's
I agree with. I'm thinking he's recognizing or doesn't know who's open and he's too slow with that processing.
No, here's what I'll say. If you're crossing the street and a car is coming towards you, and you're like, okay, all right, I'll be patient. I'll wait.
Micah Parsons
get
hit.
Here's one car, whatever else, fine. That's different than the reality of, oh, okay, these cars are going about 20 miles per hour faster and there's six of them now. And just that movement, it's like you're fine. If you just pay attention and you do what you're supposed to do, you're fine. But people naturally get a little sped up and freaked out. Oh, I got to run across the street really fast. Everything around him is happening. And I think it's happening so fast and he sees everything so fast that it's overwhelming and he speeds himself up and makes bad decisions.
I get what you're saying too about, like, is it slow through the progressions and that's causing him not to see it, chicken or the egg.
For very first play of the game, he was looking right. There was the slot guy was making an out. And then the outside guy was doing a slant.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he looked at him, and I was like, dude, you had to throw that ball a second earlier. But he didn't. He missed. Like, you either missed it, or then he flees the pocket. And it's like, you had him. You just got to trust it.
Shoddy.
I was just going to say, it is him being slow, but it is the game being fast.
Gotcha.
It's too fast for him, and so he speeds himself up.
Shoddy says he believes Jaden Blue and Miles Sanders should see significant progress this week. He is hopeful they can play against the Ravens. They will work TJ Bass more at center against Baltimore this week, and added he was a little late on red zone snaps, so they moved to the silent count. Overall pleased with Bass and Brock Hoffman, who both played every offensive snap. Bobby, you got a little game of smart or sample?
Yeah, let's. This is. I plagiarized your game yesterday, basically, and I renamed it. Is what I did. So I've got a few statements about the Cowboys game, and you guys can tell me if these are smart reactions to what we've seen, or if the sample size is too small to react in any sort of way. So number one, the Cowboys have to sign Stephon Gilmore or someone similar this week to fix their secondary.
All right, give me the cornerback room.
Healthy or what it is right now?
Everything.
Okay, so with health, the cornerback room is, if everybody's ready, is going to be Trayvon Diggs, Kyer Elam, Deron Bland, Kalen Carson. Like, that's kind of going to be your top. And then behind that, depending on who makes the roster. You've got Zion Childress, Andrew Booth, Mukwamu can play safety and corner. But the top of your corner room is going to be Diggs, Bland, Carson, and Elam.
All right, and the first initial statement you made was?
Cowboys have to sign Stephon Gilmore or someone similar this week.
Yes, they do.
So that's a smart reaction. You don't have to see any more sample size for that one.
No, because I'm not having Diggs. Have we gotten a health update on him, by the way, a progress report?
Mm-mm.
Isn't that weird?
It is, but I mean, the Cowboys' position had been that they didn't think they were going to be able to have a prognosis until about midway through training camp.
So you're going to start off with opening night against the Eagles, Elam, Bland, Carson, and then a ton of question marks, either in terms of ability or not being the natural position. Yeah, you got to go sign someone else.
Chop. I think
Stephon Gilmore will be here by the end of the week.
Ooh. Is that a you think he will be?
I think he will be.
Ooh.
Or someone similar.
Isn't that?
Has he been
like, old? Yes.
Yeah. Like, does anybody have any idea what he's been? Has anybody seen anything that
Gilmore,
he's done?
Gilmore.
Yeah, we saw him in Frisco by the press conference.
Right? Gilmore's staying ready. I think a lot of people just feel like his price is too high right now.
I mean, look, if he's ready to go, it's kind of like.
But forget about just
the Phillies just get David
adding
Robinson?
To the room.
Yeah, it doesn't have to just be Gilmore. It could be just any other corner.
Bodies.
Number two, Phil Maffa shows the Cowboys are four deep at running back, and you can put that position out of your mind now.
No.
That's sample
four
size.
Four deep? That's really dressing it up. We don't know if they're one deep.
It's a running back by committee. It's all four.
If we're basing it off the preseason game, it's Malik Davis easy.
Well, we based Deuce Vaughn off of that magical preseason game, too, and I thought he was going to have some effectiveness in the regular season.
Joe Milton is...
Who's RB1 right now? Is it Javonte?
It feels like it flips every day who they've settled on. Three, Joe Milton is too raw to let him be Dak Prescott's backup this season.
Agree.
That is like you've seen enough. You don't think it's going to get good enough fast enough?
Well, it also goes to RJ's games missed. If Dak goes out week two for the season, no, Joe can be the backup. Throw him in, develop him. The Cowboys won't do that because they wouldn't do it with Trey Lance last year. They wanted to go ahead and screw up a draft pick with Cooper Rush. But no, if it's a three-game miss, I need someone more competent and safer than Joe to win those games.
It's also, I mean, go back to 16.
Mm-hmm.
If Kellen doesn't get stepped on,
right?
He's the backup,
yeah,
not Dak. If Romo only missed a week, it'd have been Kellen. But since he was going to be out till mid-October, it became Dak Prescott. That's the same thing. Like, yeah, if Dak's going to get out for the is going to get knocked out week one for the whole year.
But let's say it's two games, and you really need to win them. We're in the last quarter of the season. You feel good about Joe or Will Grier or someone else?
Later. Yeah, I'd probably start Will Grier. You've got to win him two games later in the year.
That's how I feel about it generally. I asked Mishota this question the other day, and he had said, to me, if you need one or two games to get by, he's like, it depends on who you're talking about. He's like, if it's late in the season and they're in a competitive spot and they're against whoever the best team in the NFL would be at that point. Let's say they're going up against a Philly that's really good. He's like, I might start Milton in that instance because I don't feel like I'm beating the Eagles likely with either guy. And so at that point, I would just rather take the guy with the high ceiling who might go out there and have a career day, and Milton can do a bunch of different things.
I get that. Yeah, if you're playing the Raiders, start Will Grier or some garbage team.
We kind of mentioned this one yesterday. For instead of figuring out how to get Trayshon Holden on the roster, the Cowboys need to figure out how to get Jalen Tolbert off of it.
No, they don't need to figure out how to get him off. He led the team in touchdown catches.
He did. He was productive there.
He had 50 catches overall. I mean, like, that's, you know, I can't believe I'm going to stick up for Tolbert, but this whole idea that you just got to get, like, he's not the three, he can't be the three. I mean, he was. He objectively is a better receiver than Turpin. Like, I don't know what else to say.
Objectively.
Turpin's a cute little gadget.
Do you think
he's a wannabe Tavon Austin? I don't know where this is coming from.
Do you think, I mean, you really think that's objectively, like, that is with certainty he's a better player than Turpin is?
Better receiver.
He showed NFL.
Turpin, when given opportunities last year, did it. Like, he took that slant 75 yards. Like, he contributed as a receiver when he was given opportunities.
I think he is a gadget player. He is not an every down player.
Yeah, I agree he's not.
31 catches for 420.
But your third receiver is an every down player.
Yeah, I just think Tolbert's probably undershot that. And then the last one, Donovan Ezeraku's underwhelming pass rush performance helps move things along for Micah Parsons.
No. I heard KNC asked this to Mickey, and I thought Mickey was going to put on his green biker vest and drive through the telephone to jump them. No. I know some people, our boss included, have speculated maybe Ezeraku, he could just replace Micah. Maybe he can make, no, let's not go nuts in terms of overreaction.
When you say move things along, you say like,
hey,
the idea of, okay,
Jerry's going to be panicked because Ezeraku's debut. So that means that pushes the Micah negotiation, accelerates it.
Like if Jerry thought initially, oh, I could, yeah, we can cover with him. And then in that game was like, oh no, that dude's still like, he's still a rookie.
I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters one bit. They're going to sign him regardless. I mean, Ezeraku could be Bruce Smith.
I wish the back.
They're still going to sign Micah the same deal, and Micah's going to take it.
Well, you now all I have in my head is Mickey driving past us that day at camp, and you were like, did you see that? I was like, wait, that was Mickey? I didn't even, like, that looked like it was Lance Armstrong.
Was he doing the arm signals? No. Does anyone know the arm signals for pass or turn? What's that?
Left?
Left turn?
Right turn?
Okay.
Stop.
Yep.
Well done.
I learned that it from Arthur.
It does. Is that all with the left? Or no, you can do either one with each hand.
Well, if you're driving your car, because that's how you used to have signaling. You have to learn this to pass your driver's test. At least you used to. I'm old enough to know that. That when to pass my driver's test, I didn't know the hand signals.
Oh, yeah. I bet if we made RJ take today's driving test, like the written one, he would give so many wrong answers that they've changed. Since, like, they don't tell you, they tell you not to do 10 and 2 anymore.
I know. 9 and 3.
No, they actually say lower than that, I think.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Mm-hmm. No more 10 and 2?
It's because of airbags. When they explode, you can break your arms.
877-881-1053. Franklin LaFranco, injury attorney, text line. The Cowboys were on the red carpet, and you had some legends talking about the Micah drama. And forget about the Cowboys on Netflix. I got something else for you to watch that's going to make Kevin Hegland very, very proud. That's next for the 6 a.m. Club. We got a Rangers-Angels ticket giveaway in the 7 o'clock expressway as well. Just getting started on 105.3 The Fan. Back to the comeback of the year for the Rangers season at 7 o'clock. Rangers-Angels tickets. We need you to win them in the 6 a.m. Club. You've been listening through the roof. The ratings are out of control, so we need you to go ahead and win them. 720 Expressway when we have Ask Reddit as well. And then Jeff Bannister, former Rangers manager, Diamondbacks bench coach, will join us at 8 o'clock here on Sean and RJ. The Dallas Cowboys were out on the red carpet last night for the Netflix premiere of the America's Team thing. And it's actually going to come out for all of us 1 week from today on a Tuesday. We are working on getting on the Netflix producers.
Well, we are. And by the way, the Cowboys would say, no. They were not on the red carpet last night. They were on the blue carpet.
On the blue carpet.
It was a blue carpet that was rolled out for Jerry.
I want to see if Tommy Yarish, 920 from Oxnard, can like give us the full review. Because you had all the media members there that had a sit-down, Michael Irvin, Emmett Smith, Al Michaels, the MC. I just want a spoiler. I want the whole thing spoiled. Because I'm seeing positive reviews so far. Jesse Holly, oh my gosh, I hate to say this. Jerry Jones has another hit on his hands. So I'm like, can the media disclose this? Or is there some NDA, and some privacy, some understood thing that I can't go out and tweet about what I just saw?
Yeah, I don't know if you could. Because, I mean, obviously there are movie premieres a week before stuff comes out. And you'll get reviews from people who will tell you about certain things within the movie. So I would imagine it's probably just, yeah, you can talk about it, but let's not just spoil the whole thing, is what I would guess. But, yeah.
Micah Parsons, a subject for Emmett and Michael Irvin. Before all that, Adam Schefter with the latest on McAfee.
Micah, I think it's unbelievable that that statement came out about 10 days ago. And since that statement came out, there have been zero contract talks between the Dallas Cowboys and Micah Parsons. Now, you would think that something like that would trigger some conversation to get everybody, all sides, in one room to try to get a deal done. And in fact, it feels like it's done the opposite. It feels like Micah is disappointed and bothered by the way the Cowboys have done their business. It feels like the Cowboys are bothered and disappointed that Micah would make his feelings known like that, ask for a trade. Jerry Jones felt like he had a deal in place with Micah that isn't going to get done right now. And now, all of a sudden, there are a whole host of new issues that we have to ask if these two sides are unwilling to talk, which has been the case, and unwilling to negotiate.
So that's Schefter saying absolutely zip zero, nothing. That would run against what I said last week, that Jerry and Micah spoke for hours and hours on Wednesday night. I haven't gotten any further follow-up on that, hoping to today, but nothing. So to me, it's now trying to gauge if you're Jerry and Steven, how much of a good soldier is he going to be? Maybe they don't care about the team chemistry thing or the culture, but I'd be asking how much of a good soldier is he going to be playing out the year on 21 or 24 million or whatever it is. I've seen conflicting reports. That's the big question, because he's showing up to all the practices and all the games. That to me is a very good sign that he's going to play the season if things currently stay the way they are.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Like if I was
he doesn't
Mike,
strike I'm, me as the missed games type.
Well, not when he's showing up to all the practices and everything else.
Again.
And putting on the jersey. Schottenheimer said, I want everyone to look uniform, and he's being a good soldier.
Yeah, I think he'll play. If they don't get something done, I think he'll play out the deal, I would imagine. Or at the very least, he may just continue with the back issue. Like, oh, I'm still hurt. I'm banged up. I'm not going to be able to get healthy in time. But if he plays that out, I don't know. If they don't get it done before the start of the season, their relationship is done, I think, eventually. Like, yeah. I don't think that they're going to be able to keep this going. So if it doesn't get done by the time the season begins, then I think it's all right. We'll play this out, and then we got to figure out how you're getting me out of here next year.
Well, I mean, Jerry's going to be like, I have the tag.
I have tag.
I don't think they want to do that. Like, I think the Cowboys can sit there and talk about, you know, how many tools they may have at their disposal like they've done before. I think the reality is if they don't get a deal done and he has to play through this option, it gets that ugly for that long, I think they would just say, let's go ahead and move him.
But they tagged Dak and they made him play.
Dak didn't get like this. Like, this has gotten to a place that they haven't done before. And if you're telling me they do that for another 4 or 5 months and let that simmer. Yeah, if it's 4 or 5 months and it lets it simmer, they're going to be like, we don't want you here anymore. And he clearly doesn't want to be here anymore, so let's go.
Break down your Micah pie percentage-wise of the three options. Extension before game one. He plays out the year on the final year of the deal. Micah misses games.
60% they get it done before the year. And then we'll say 39% that he just plays it out, and then 1% that he misses games.
Yeah, 1% that he misses games. I think it's...
You're going to favor now playing it out on the deal or getting it done?
I'm going to favor playing it out on the deal. I don't think they get it done before the year. I think the handshake agreement, backing out of that, whatever you want to call it, I think Jerry's dug in on that. I think he's dug in on that. And short of Micah coming to him and saying, okay, I'll take 40 a year,
yeah,
you know, which is below market value, then I don't think Jerry's going to go with that. Now, maybe if it's fully guaranteed, you know, 40 fully guaranteed over 4 years, maybe Micah goes for that one.
I don't know. I think Micah doesn't want to just... Because
that would be a boost, right? That would be a win, fully guaranteed.
Yeah, I think Micah wants to... What it is annually matters a lot, I think, to this negotiation and what it looks like. I think guarantees-wise, Micah's one who thinks, I'm good enough, I don't have to totally worry about unguaranteed money because you're not going to cut me. Right. Like, I'm gonna be fine. I think he wants his money. He wants his money maxed.
If, let's just say they gave him 4 for $160. Let's just say fully guaranteed, 100% guaranteed. Can you manipulate the cap, or is each $140 million?
If it's fully guaranteed, it's really hard to adjust any of it. That's why Deshaun Watson's number's so hard for them.
An old clip was dug up yesterday from Dez Bryant discussing his contract negotiation back in the day with Jerry. This was Dez talking, I believe it was with the Pivot Pod.
Jerry, he invited me to, he wanted to meet with me. We met at the stadium, and we were talking about the contract. You know, he tried to get me to sign a contract I ain't like. I thought it was some bull. And I was like, I ain't this dumb. 10 years for $100 million, $20 million guarantee, I'm not that dumb. First off, I know I just played 5 years, so I know I'm not going to play another 10. I'm not expecting to play another 10. So it's like $20 million guaranteed. I'm seeing what's going on. So it's like, nah, I'm scoring at will. So it's like nobody getting in the end zone the way I'm getting in the end zone. So, you know, it's like I ain't taking that.
They're going to cut your ass in year two.
So look, check this out. So, you know, we going through it. We going through the motion or whatever. You know, I'm listening to him, you know, and I kind of interrupted him a little bit. I stood up and I was like, hey, Mr. Jones, you see that field down there? I say, you think you can cover me? He said, nah, you'll destroy me. And I said, so what makes you think that I can sit here and negotiate a contract with you? Just like that. And then right after that, he got talking about, you know, trades and things like that. I remember walking out there, but I'd take my chance. Trade.
So that was Jerry trying to negotiate with Dez in the private sit down.
Yeah, and it is a good point. Yeah, like, we're mismatched the same way you would be out there on the field mm-hmm. right now.
Yep.
And I don't know, that one probably doesn't get referenced enough, as that negotiation got tense.
Yeah.
That one got pretty bad.
Jerry keeps referencing Emmitt Smith and Emmitt missing the first two games. We can still be okay because the Cowboys won the Super Bowl. Emmitt, on the blue carpet last night at the Netflix premiere, he wanted to set the record straight on what happened back in the day.
I keep trying to tell people, there's a marketing play,
right?
And then there's a reality play.
Right.
The reality play is, and I'm going to tell folks, the media should have never called me a holdout. Because I didn't have a contract. If I take your contract from you right now from the place you work, you can't come back in the building. They're taking your key card and everything else. You can't come back in the building. And you have no job there. But if I give you a job and you get a key fob, you can come into the building.
Right.
My contract ended.
Right.
I didn't have no more obligations to the Dallas Cowboys. I was out there in the wind as a free agent for 30 days until those 30 days closed. Then I only can talk to one team. I lost leverage. And that's what Michael Parsons is at right now.
Right.
It's not having enough leverage.
Right.
And so, but he also has another year on his contract.
Right.
So there's a distinct difference between a holdout and being truly a free agent.
And that gets totally forgotten. I forget it a lot of times that the contract actually expired.
Yeah, and the rules were obviously different back then. So his contract expired, but I mean, he was very limited on who he could like negotiate with, what he could do. They held his rights, but it was, yeah, he didn't have anything that he could play on if they didn't come to an agreement.
Meanwhile, Choppy, Bobby making you very proud as he went and checked what the actual Vegas difference would be without Micah Parsons on the field.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm making you proud right now, and then I'm going to stomp on it when I tell you this is why I think Vegas is stupid. So what?
Can I guess?
Yeah, go ahead and guess.
Is this win total or per game?
This is like point spread.
Half a point.
Zero. So right. The Athletic had reached out about Rashawn Slater and Micah Parsons to various bookmakers about, hey, what kind of difference does this make? And one of the things that they said a trader at BetMGM told The Athletic that Ja'Marr Chase and Saquon Barkley are the non-quarterbacks who are worth 1 to 2 points depending on the situation, but that Parsons, Terry McLaurin, Trey Hendrickson, and Slater are all worth 0 points. So this is the stuff that makes it hard for me to use betting markets or Vegas seriously as any sort of part of the analysis or the way we look at it, because they have the number one defense in the NFL over the last 5 years when Micah's on the field. When Micah's off the field, it's 31st. So like, is Vegas telling me that they think number one defense versus number 31 defense is not anything that would affect their point spread?
No, I think what Vegas is telling you is that sample size is too small to worry about.
5 years?
No, the amount of plays per game.
Yeah, I mean, there were full games he missed, and he misses 20% of the plays of a game. Yeah. That stacks up.
It does stack up. It's just a general rule they follow. There's very few players that are non-quarterbacks that move the line at all. Very, very few.
Which I'm not saying Micah should move it a touchdown, but I would think, all right, that may be worth a point in terms of, like, he impacts the game pretty significantly.
Yeah, I would say, cause I think what they're also saying is, yes, he plays, let's say he plays 60 snaps. He really only impacts about... He wouldn't impact any running plays. They wouldn't say.
Certainly not in a game that matters.
And he would impact maybe 3 to 5 passing plays.
Are you also not going to move a line because you want to keep it at 6.5? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you're going to get
liability. You don't want 5.5-point lines. So he might be worth a point, but we're not going to have a 5.5-point line.
Yeah, like if it's, you know, they'd like to keep their lines. The old adage is if the line is between 4 and 6, they have no idea about the game. They're not going to move it from 3 to 2.5 because that puts somebody at a disadvantage. They're trying to get, you would get too many bets if it's 2.5 on a team to cover.
So then that would say that it's not at all for them about, like whenever we reference betting and out, like betting spreads or anything else anyway, it's not even about how they impact the game then.
No, it's not really about, I mean, for a quarterback it is, right, obviously. But for everybody else, it's about, all right, if we move the line 0.5 point, it's just going to give us too much liability on one side.
Did you turn the Rangers game off early after Nate Eovaldi got blown up? Hopefully you didn't. We relive the magic on the home of the Rangers and a Rangers Angels ticket giveaway next.